Oh, me? All right. What does it say on here? Oh, Johnny X. Okay, we're still using that. Online, I've been known as Johnny X for, I think, since the early 1990s. My real name is Drew Myers. I'm the Science Track Director, but some of you will be very surprised to hear that information, and now you know my real name, but since you may have only known me as Johnny X for close to two decades. I got started with the 2600 scene, 2600.com. Anyone familiar with that? 2600.com? Yeah, back in the early 90s, they're very long-running hacker group based out of New York City, and they throw conventions up there. We had a Nashville chapter started by a friend of mine. I showed up at the meeting, started hanging out. We decided to start our own hacker convention in Nashville. It's been going... Oh, damn it, I forgot the... The swag. I had HackerCon swag I was going to bring out. Y'all know the Intel Inside logo? We have one that says Hacker Inside. They're for condoms, and I was going to toss those out to everyone. So I've been ensured that they're actual, real, functional condoms, but if you want to put that to use, I would suggest possibly some secondary backup form of birth control as well, because I will not be responsible for any rugrats who are produced as a result of relying exclusively on the Hacker Inside condom.
By backup birth control, you mean change your address right after that night?
No comment. So moving right along. I think back in 1997, was it, Scott? Dragon Con decided, because that interweb thing was getting big and popular and there were some hacker movies out and some hacker cons held here in Atlanta, they wanted to talk about hackerish topics. And we were contacted up in Nashville and asked to come down and provide some content, and we did, and did so for many years, and had a nice little group of programs that we, especially Hacking 101, 201, 301, that was the Nashville and Atlanta 2600 groups. 201 became kind of infamous, as I alluded to earlier, and did that up until about 2002. And then for some reason, I was asked to take over the Ailing Space and Science track. So I've been official ever since, and now I have to be responsible as well as official. So there you go. IT geek for 20 years, even worked for Google at one point. I was actually also, when I was living here in Atlanta, I worked for a web hosting company that specialized in porn. Hey, you know, this was the first collapse of the dot-com bubble back in the early 2000s. I was desperate for work, and I got to be root at hustler.com for a while, along with a few thousand other websites. I swear to God, I did not know we were hosting tubgirl.com until someone pointed it out to me, at which point I thought, okay, I have to go in the server room and burn that server and cleanse the internet. That'll be my good deed for the year. The porn industry place got scary. They got into a lot of stuff that frankly scared the hell out of me. We can't go into details, but I had legitimate concerns, in my opinion, that when I was working weekend graveyard shift, we might get raided by the FBI, the DIA, DEA, the IRS, and a whole bunch of other alphabet soup federal agencies. I didn't want to be there anymore. Unfortunately, they fired me before I could quit, but my big fuck you to them was are there any kids here? To you was I got a job with Google about 3 weeks later, and I beat out 3,000 other people for that job. So there you go. It was interesting. Google is a fascinating place to work, but it wasn't really for me. In fact, I figured I'd had the two geek dream jobs, porn site, web and working for Google when they were the hot IT thing, and wasn't entirely satisfied for either. So actually, I'm taking care of family obligations right now, and then I'm going back to school to get a degree in genetics and hopefully mutate people and get paid for it.
Cool.
I'll be first.
Cool. So my hackerish claim, I guess, is... I'm good at social engineering. I'm good on the manipulating people front. I'm not a super technical person, and those folks really both awe and scare the hell out of me, because I know some of the super technical hackers, and wow, yeah, they're cool.
Looks like we got an IMAP hit already up here. IMAP, somebody, sapphirek.com?
It hasn't scrolled in a while.
Oh, it hasn't?
Yeah, I think this is these are
earlier.
Captures from
earlier.
EFF.
Okay.
Excuse me, track earlier today.
Okay.
So, tell us about the wall of sheep. I'll turn my mic over to you for a second while I drink more coffee. Oh, yeah. We got that. You need to run around.
We have this thing called wireless technology. I know it's new.
Yeah.
But
it means without wires.
Yeah. I do social engineering, not technology, okay?
You just said that. I wasn't listening. Okay, on the EFF track, we're all about privacy, security, your rights. And so this is all about privacy. If you want privacy, you actually have to do something to protect it. If you don't, people see everything you're doing. So we happen to run, as a courtesy, an open Wi-Fi network. So while you're on our track, you can check your mail, do things. However, while you're on our track, checking your email, do not give away your credentials. Now, you'll notice here, I have the site you went to, the port you went to, so this is HTTP, your user ID, and your password. Now, you're wondering why it's showing three characters instead of all stars. I was at a conference. We were doing this demo. A teacher, this is really sad. I hope there aren't any teachers here. If you are, hide your eyes. A teacher came up and said, hey, you didn't get my password. I don't have any stars on my password. I went, no, I'm being nice. I'm not displaying it. He says, no, there are no stars. Okay, fine. How's that? And I gave him his entire password. Of course, the entire room could now see it. And he panicked. And he says, you have my password. I said, it's not me you have to worry about. It's that kid right there with the Backtrack 4 CD that I'm using. Actually, it's 5, release 3 now. But back then, it was Backtrack 4. You got to worry about him because you don't know he's sniffing your traffic. This can happen to you at any Starbucks, any place there's an open wireless. You're giving away your credentials. With this information, they are you. Don't do this. Make sure that every protocol you're using is encrypted. If you're at a coffee shop, go over a VPN, use Tor, something, so that the people on the wireless network cannot sniff your traffic.
Yeah, I noticed some looks out there like, okay, technical terms, geek speak, I don't know what he's talking about, don't know how to do this. One of the cool things about the hacking community, the white hat and the gray hat hacking community, is we like to talk to people and we'll teach you how to do this stuff. And there are a bazillion resources nowadays, way, way more than there were 20 years ago, where you can meet up with other people and they will show you how to do everything from lock down the wireless on your laptop to build an amateur fusion reactor, and I'm not kidding about that. I'll throw out some URLs for you. They'll be on the website after the convention. Give us a few days to recover. 2600-2600.com. That's a good place to start. That's where I started. You can hit their website and you can find out if there are 2600 meetings in your neck of the woods. They have them in cities all around the world. DEF CON also does these too. They're the biggest, oldest hacker convention in the United States. And you can Google DEF CON meetings and see if there's a meeting like that for you. If you're not too sure about going to the hackerish meetings, look for local Linux users group. They'll help you out. You don't even have to go to the physical meetings. You can get the off the website. You can sign up to mailing lists, ask questions, go on IRC channels, chat channels, whatever you want to do. Here in Atlanta, there is a fantastic resource called Freeside Atlanta. You can just Google those two words, Freeside and Atlanta. They're a huge warehouse hacker space where they've been collecting equipment that's been donated or that they bought for years. And again, you can do they teach classes and everything from how to script in Perl to how to rip a car apart and turn it into some gargantuan battle vehicle that you can drive in the Dragon Con parade. They started up about the time I left Atlanta, and they're one of the big things I really miss about Atlanta because they've got some heavy duty equipment there, big laser engravers, cutters. It's an amazing space. It's probably about 10 times the size of this room. And they will teach you pretty much anything technical you want to know. If they don't know how to do it, they'll put out a call and say, hey, let's learn how to do whatever. And then go get the equipment for it, whatever, if it's required. Figure out how to use it, maybe rebuild it, fix it, and there you go. It's a fantastic resource.
I just also want to break in here. Good statement there. I just want to break in here as well and say that when I'm in a public Wi-Fi spot, I run the equivalent of this application against myself to make sure that I'm not accidentally leaking passwords and fix whatever it is that might be trying to do that. One of my many roles that I have is that one of my clients produces technical conferences on cruise ships. And on one of these ship-bound conferences,
One of the speakers, who was a senior writer about technology and things like that, written pieces for the New York Times, things like that, and he was giving a lecture on this very topic, Wi-Fi security. And so earlier that day, I happened to be in the Internet Cafe when he was there, and I had my sniffer running to watch for myself, and up pops his username and password. So when he was starting to teach the class, and he talks about the beginnings of this, about using the right protocol, and I go, not like you did earlier today because your password ends in 5 or whatever it was. He goes, oh. So this is a guy who's trying to teach us how to do it. I'm not saying don't distrust all teachers. I'm just saying it slips up for any of us. About 6 years ago, it was Wall of Sheep thing, my Twitter client logged in the clear, and my password was up there for Twitter, so I had to immediately change my Twitter password. So it can catch any of us. So this is serious stuff. People are watching you, even if you don't think you're that interesting. Remember that getting access to the systems that you access may not be about you. It may be about launching some sort of assault from your machine to some other machine. So you have resources that aren't about you, but about the kind of equipment you have access to, and that's useful to people.
Yeah, you reminded me of an interesting point. When hacking first started, and it was actually back in the late 50s and early 60s. That's when the term hacking came into use and the first computers started being hacked in the sense that we mean. The computers were these huge mainframes. I think IBM, probably Burroughs Machine Company, were about the only places that produced them. People had very limited access to them. And the MIT students, who were, of course, very interested in this equipment, couldn't get past the employees to play with the machines. You rented the machine if you were a university or government. That's the only people who could afford computers back then. You wrote your programs on punch cards. You submitted them to the IBM employees who maintained the machines. They were sarcastically referred to as the high priests. And you got your results back a day or two later, and that was the only access you really had to this stuff. So what did the MIT college kids do, being very curious about all this stuff and wanting to play with it? They just waited till after hours when the computer priest went home, and then they broke into the computer lab and started playing with it and found out, hey, if we spin the giant rotating drum on the ancient equivalent of the hard drive in certain ways, we can generate some musical tones, which, of course, when they told the IBM priest about that later on, they freaked out. Ah, you're abusing the hardware, blah, blah, blah. The whole reason hacking started out was there was almost no access to the machines. When the machines got connected together, there really wasn't originally much access to the mediums of communication, the early internet, ARPANET it was called back then, and people didn't have access to stuff like Linux and BSD that we have now, the free and open source operating systems. Most of that has changed. You can pick up throwaway computers from people who are upgrading from an ancient machine to something newer that's more powerful than pretty much the totality of the computing power we had back in the 70s. Almost anyone, I would say, but pretty much anyone who really wants to, at least here in the U.S. and other really developed parts of the world, can get on the internet. Even in a lot of places in the third world, if you're creative, you can get internet access. We've got very well-developed, robust, maintained, and updated free open-source operating systems. A lot of the reasons for hacking that originally existed back in the 50s, 60s, and even 70s don't exist anymore. You can build your own network lab at home out of throwaway gear. You can build your own penetration lab. You can get the internals of the operating system, the source code, and play with that and modify it all you want. What a lot of the hacking community focuses on now is, now that we've got access to these tools, what do we do with them? How do we make our lives and everyone else's better, or at least more interesting? And that's sort of what we talk about. Maybe we should take some questions now. We've been ranting for a bit. Let's do that. Yeah. By the way, this is the Reverend Susie the Floozy. She's also a social engineering expert, and she hosts a radio show on WREK, Bob's Slack Time Funhouse.
And I'm an alcoholic.
Questions. Raise your hands. There we go.
Run, run, Luke, run.
Run, O Minion. Runs like turbo.
See, for my age, you say run, Luke, run. If you're a lot younger, you say run, Forrest, run. So it just depends. So identify about what age you're from.
Maybe a bit of a tangent, but what's your take on like the distinction between hacker and cracker, just strictly from a terminology standpoint? Or do you prefer black hat, white hat to make that distinction?
And cracker for me always had a real specific connotation. That was someone who cracked copy protected software. And you could have crackers who really were good at what they were doing, and they wrote like key generators or cracks or whatever. And then you had the greater circle of lesser crackers around them, script kiddies, I guess. You consider crackers a small subset of hackers, some overlap between the two. That's my definition. I'd draw it out on a whiteboard if I had one for you. But, you know, little circles and everything that kind of overlapped. Yeah, but I'm
just
not going to
imagine
that.
A whiteboard.
Yeah. Did that answer your question? Was that coherent?
It was coherent. What I was actually more getting at is, I think from some of the reading I've done online, hacker used to mean, before the mainstream media took over the meaning of the word, was essentially anyone adept with a computer. But
again, not necessarily a computer, any complex system. The phone freaks back in the 70s, Captain Crunch, the people who did the blue box. And by the way, how many of you know that Apple Computers, Steve Jobs, and Steve, what's the other guy?
Wozniak.
Thank you. Yeah, part of their funding for starting Apple was they were selling blue boxes, which were illegal toll fraud devices that allowed you to make long-distance phone calls for free. So, yay. I don't think that was Steve Jobs. I think that was Wozniak who was more that. Yeah.
All the pranks they used to do at MIT were called hacks.
Yeah. Oh, got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Pranks.mit.edu. That fantastic website. And those are some of the most creative hacks you'll find anywhere on the planet. They've got about, decades worth documented there.
There's a really good book called If at All Impossible Involve a Cow.
Yeah,
it's like a history of hacks. Some of which were done by Jim Mallon, who went on to produce Mystery Science Theater 3000.
There is a war of sorts going on between Caltech and MIT. MIT was kind of jealous of Caltech after they got the some publicity in I can't think of the name of the movie now. It'll come back to me later. Anyway, the MIT and Caltech, there are several books written about the history of pranks that have occurred at both universities, and these are incredibly creative, non-destructive. It's not considered a prank if it's destructive. Usually educational, and almost always damn funny and just jaw-droppingly creative. Caltech has got Caltech's greatest pranks and more of Caltech's greatest pranks you can get from their online bookstore. I do not get a cut for advertising those books. I just think they're hilariously funny. The MIT books are advertised at pranks.mit.edu and can be bought through their bookstore. Their names are a little bit more varied and complex, and I don't remember them exactly right now, but that's where you can find them.
They had a name, the Institute of Hacks, Tomfoolery, and Pranks,
yeah.
Which also stands for the acronym for I Hate This Fucking Place.
Yeah, right. And if you're ever up in Boston, Cambridge area, you can go by the MIT campus and see the Prank Museum there. They've got things like
got the smoots, smoot measurements. They carried a student and marked in paint how many George Smoots distances it took to cross the bridge.
Yeah, it's one of the 50
the
things.
Marks. They
were carrying them across the bridge that kind of connected MIT and you would go from MIT to Harvard back in. So they just kind of measured the bridge off in smoots and made a paint mark everywhere. And the cops apparently refreshed the paint marks because it's real useful if there's an accident on the bridge, and they document in the police forums at what smoot point it occurred on the bridge.
The point is smoot.
Yeah.
Too early? Too
good.
Early? I'm sorry.
No,
all
it's
right.
Never
yeah,
too
yeah.
early. Never
all
too
right.
early.
I have to throw three bad puns.
Interrupt us. We tend to babble, so if you got a question there, just give them the mic and start yelling at us.
I'm not sure we ever answered the other guy's question, but it's okay.
I forgot what it was. I apologize.
I'm self-identified as a hacker, and I still continue to be that. And I don't think the word has changed, except some people mean that something more than that. When I say hacker, I know exactly what it means. It means the kind of person that gets in, like we were talking about earlier, gets in, is really tries to understand something from all angles, and has a degree of familiarity with it to the degree that they're probably an expert in the area, and so much more than even the designers.
You have an abiding curiosity.
Yeah, and curiosity, too.
Just go ahead and jump in at any point.
Yeah, please.
First off, I would like to apologize if my questions sound sloppy. I'm slightly inebriated.
Woohoo!
Who is slightly inebriated at this point? Let's see.
Who is only slightly inebriated?
You, sir, are in good company, so it's okay. We understand.
Who's more than slightly? there we go.
Drink to win, bro.
Woohoo! Who started drinking at 10 this morning? Yeah.
Just go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. Who hasn't stopped since last night?
What film have you seen that has depicted the most realistic interpretation of hacking?
The film I was thinking of earlier, whose name I forgot. That's it. It wasn't Sneakers, no.
No.
It's not Hackers?
No. Oh, God, no.
No.
I'll have a funny story about that in a minute.
Nor was it the Sandra Bullock movie, or whatever that one, the net, yeah, ooh.
No.
Not War Games.
Older movie, and it was set at a college university, and it involved a laser.
War Games made me a felon.
Thank you, that's it. Yeah, a lot of the stuff in the background of Real Genius was based on things that actually took place at Caltech. So the Caltech people loved it because there were all these, yeah, that's where I was, our dorm, woo-hoo-hoo, or oh, I remember that event, woo-hoo-hoo. And that kind of prompted the prank war between Caltech and MIT. The last I heard, the Caltech people had gone to MIT, and they had gone on whatever the day is when you bring prospective freshmen and their parents through, and they were handing out T-shirts and cards and stuff that said things like, MIT, when you're only second best, the best come to Caltech, and stuff like that, and went around the campus and got away with that for the better part of a day and then escaped without getting caught. Mm-hmm. The MIT people, I believe, retaliated by going out to Caltech and stealing a very large historical cannon that had been used in World War II and was mounting on the campus. And last I heard, pictures of the cannon in various parts of the world keep being sent to Caltech. So I don't know if they'll get their cannon back, but MIT definitely raised the bar on that.
I think that they hacked Caltech's cards, the flip cards.
I think MIT did that, and they hacked.
One of the football games hacked each other's cards, they were spelling out messages that they didn't know because each person.
I don't mean to interrupt or anything,
go for it. Go ahead. We'll keep doing this all night if you like.
What are your thoughts generally on Anonymous and on?
Is this God speaking? Because I can't see who's asking.
Back here.
Oh, blue shirt. Okay, thank
you. There
you go. Yeah. What was the question again?
What are your thoughts on Anonymous and generally just freeing information, whether it's good or bad or not?
Maybe. I think some of the stuff they do is pretty interesting, and I agree with it wholeheartedly, and I'm absolutely fascinated by the fact that they are anonymous, and this is a kind of spontaneously self-organized, distributed, no centralized leadership type thing. But, there's a lot of potential to do some naughty and unjustified stuff with that. You got to wonder if you're part of that group, if I was part of Anonymous and I was going to take part in some kind of action, I would want to be very careful that I had my facts straight on something before I acted. So I think it would be easy if some, say, anti-Anonymous group wanted to set up somebody to put some disinformation out there and have Anonymous go after their target. I'm speculating hypothetically. This may have happened, maybe not, but I approach with caution. It's a tool that could be used for both good and evil.
I think that there are lots of reasons to have a system of laws that's dynamic and doesn't get too entrenched in old world thoughts, old style ideas. And we need occasionally for people to cross the line to show how ridiculous some of the stuff doesn't work when applied to new areas. I have to say that carefully, having my history, but yeah. You have to have some chaos in a system in order to shake out the bad parts and bring in the new ones. And I appreciate when people are willing to be that chaos. I've taken enough arrows through my head that I can't do that anymore, but I'm glad that there are other people out there that are looking at that.
I have a suggestion for people who want to ask questions. In addition to just raising your hand, get up, dance around, and be entertaining to attract the attention of the person with the microphone. Just a suggestion. Next person with the mic. I would also suggest that when you get the mic, feel free to interrupt us because we will babble.
I'm interrupting
on.
You. Is that okay?
Go. Yeah.
What's your word?
On the topic of Anonymous, how do you feel about Anonymous and other groups using, whether you want to call them novices or script kiddies, to basically launch denial of service attacks, or even like MySQL penetrations, and the end users not really knowing what they're doing, whether it's because of general ignorance or willing or desire to participate and not knowing what they're subjecting themselves to, if their ISP was to be compromised or them to be backtracked to that attack.
If you're going to participate in illegal activities, I think you better damn well know what it is you're participating in and why you're doing it. And if you believe passionately in it, you should not be afraid of the consequences should you get caught. I'm willing to break the law for things that I believe in very strongly and stand up for. My mom was in the civil rights movement, and she was at the march in Selma, and she's still got scars on her arms and hands from when the dogs were set on all the protesters. It didn't matter what their skin color was. And she spent some time in jail. And my thinking on this is I'm not afraid to go to jail if it's for something that wouldn't embarrass people whose opinion I care about. But I would want to know damn well what it is that I was doing, and I would want to make sure it was for the right reasons, at least for me.
Now I'm going to take this on a slight tangent. There are far too many people out there doing web coding that shouldn't be. The reason we have so many MySQL backdoors and PHP backdoors is people that are rank amateurs are coding a lot of these big websites, including for professional companies. The shortcut to that for me is friends don't let friends use MySQL or PHP. But I might offend a few people out there by saying that. I think, well, first off...
I want your details on that in Hacking 201 and possibly 301.
If you get me happy enough. Okay. Yes, I'll
come, go into come to 201 if you want the tech information.
Yeah, yeah. So it's one thing to use the exploit tools to sort of, you know, do political gain, but really the problem is I'm entrusting my credit card number, my bank account, my flight information, all that stuff to these websites that I have to trust, and there's way too much stuff out there going on these days. Who today, in this day and age, unencrypted passwords in a database? Can you believe it? Unencrypted passwords, and passwords that aren't hashed, and passwords aren't hashed with salt. This is crazy. We're way past where we should be doing this kind of stuff. It is nuts to me. All right, there's my little hacker rant.
Okay.
Who's got the mic? Oh, there we are. You weren't jumping up and down.
Go for it.
Okay, so on the subject of Anonymous, it led me to think, what do you guys think about the SOPA acts that are continuously trying to get passed through, and if one of them should somehow pass in a serious manner, what do you think as hackers you would do against it?
We're just on a panel with that. The last panel on the EFF track, in fact, was about that. Did you go to that panel? Oh, too bad. He wasn't able to make it to that
recording,
panel.
The recording so all will the be rest on the EFF that, website after the convention.
All the rest of you that went, go talk to him after the break. The thing is, we can stop these if we act on them. That's the takeaway. And I think the important thing is to watch the EFF, watch ACLU, watch, what's the third one?
Epic.
Watch Epic. And when they start telling you to move, move. Let's stop it before it gets in place. If it's in place, it's going to be a real mess.
And this seems kind of obvious, but pay attention to what the people in elected offices, particularly the ones you vote for, pay attention to what they're doing and what bills they're signing. All that stuff is publicly available, and trying to pass bad laws, write them a freaking letter. Don't send an email. Write a polite one. Yeah, not a threatening. Not a threatening one. No. GovTrack.us? Ooh, I'll check that out. Thank you.
GovTrack.us.
I thought it was GoTrack.
Yeah, go for it. But loud. Go loud.
In fact, it's okay. I can just speak up.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the recording. We want you for posteriority. Yeah.
For the permanent record.
All right, so I don't mean to turn this to politics, but...
Why not? It affects all of us.
Yeah.
But there's obviously a little bit of distastefulness within our system, easily observed within anywhere you go on YouTube. If whether you vote for the man or not, the Ron Paul's entire campaign has been hurt really badly, and there's many instances. So if we should fail to stop one of these from passing, if it was forced through the system, what could be done?
First off, anywhere I go on YouTube is Gangnam videos these days. So,
I guess that depends on how willing you are to buck the system and what way you want to do it. Do you want to get involved politically? Do you want to get? Well, for everyone, you have to decide that kind of for yourself. Or do you get involved politically? Do you engage in civil disobedience? If nothing else, vote the bastards out who pass the laws that you don't like, or at least do your best to vote them out. I don't know. I mean, our political system, I think everyone would agree, it's not perfect. But, yeah, you know, it's the worst one around, except for all the other ones that have been tried. So
I think
a lot of people have a distaste for politics, but it affects all of us, and you got to be involved with it. Otherwise, you got no reason to complain.
One more thing is every time you hear the word bipartisan, you should yell at the person and say, why aren't you saying nonpartisan?
Excellent.
That's such an important thing because we're drilling into our mind that there are only two parties. That's part of why Ron Paul failed. It's part of what gets into the system. We need to get it back to the word nonpartisan.
I don't agree with a lot of Ron Paul's politics, but I think that the fact that the mainstream GOP changed so many of the rules at the convention itself to prevent the delegates from coming in was bullshit. You may not like what the guy has to say, but if they follow the rules and procedures, then you damn well better let him speak or you're just a bunch of hypocrites. So that's my feeling on it.
Everybody tweet tonight. Nonpartisan, not bipartisan.
Getting off the subjects of politics real quick, do you guys have any advice for getting into open source?
In what way? That's kind of broad.
Yeah.
Can you define your terms some more?
If a person wants to start getting into the open source community and get involved in a project, what's the best way to do that?
Do you have a passion about any particular project already?
Not any particular one I've seen.
Are you using Linux on your desktop?
Half the time.
That's a good start.
Well, there's probably, what area are you from?
Pardon?
Where are you from? What area? Here?
Over there.
Yeah,
over there? Back there? Where?
Sorry, I'm from Kennesaw.
I don't even know where that is. Is that close by?
It's like 20
okay,
minutes.
Okay, and I think there's an Atlantic Linux users group probably. Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of them around there.
Hang out.
If you're willing to travel a little bit and do FaceTime with people, there's lots of different users groups and various different open source projects, and there's a natural. Yeah, I'll let you take that because you're more involved with it than I am.
Okay, if you're into open source, Atlanta Linux Enthusiasts, one of the largest Linux organizations. Oh, there's another one, here in Atlanta. There's also OWASP, which is the Open Web Application Security Project, which gets into, if you're going to code, as Randall was pointing out, you can actually learn to do it, not give away everybody's credentials. Kind of cool.
Most of these groups have also got pretty active mailing lists, so if you can't physically make the meetings, you can at least get on the mailing list and start asking people.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing. You can get on mailing lists for this stuff that's not local to your area, and they don't care. They're totally cool. It's amazing. There's a thing called the internet, and it connects everybody.
I believe it's called the interwebs.
It's the series of tubes.
Yeah.
I know because I help pull the cables.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm really that old. What was the other one? There's a Perlmongers group here in Atlanta, and they actually, for those who don't know, Perlmongers. Randall, what's Perlmongers?
Perlmongers is the local users group for Perl. There's groups all over the world for that.
Yeah, and there's a very active one here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And one of the things they do in a Perlmongers group is a group of them get together and are working collaboratively on open source projects, and then they come back to the meeting and discuss what they're working on and how they're doing it.
Ooh, a hack night.
If you don't want to do just software, the Freeside Atlanta people do open source hardware as well. I believe they've got a demo here this year for a 3D printer, which is basically a modified inkjet printer, only they print out physical objects with it. I've got some keychain fobs and things like that, which is a kind of fun proof of concept. But you can also use these things. The medical community has repurposed them to custom 3D print organs for organ transplant. Mm. Yeah, that's happening now.
Yeah.
Yay, science fiction becoming reality.
The other thing is that getting involved with the community can mean all sorts of levels of things. It might just be participating with other people that are also using it, but you might also find yourself being willing to assist new people to the things that you're already familiar with, or even like, not necessarily, this is all probably English here, well it is English, I'm speaking English, right? Yeah, okay,
see.
Translations are good, Helping the documentation, because sometimes the documentation sucks, answering questions on the email list or IRC for people. There's all sorts of ways to get involved with open source.
So I can have a piggyback to that question. For a person who's relatively interested in like cybersecurity or hacking in general, but has no real idea where to start, would it be better to start with like a group? Would it be better to start with going to college for computer, you know, security? I know it's silly, but it's a legitimate thing to ask. Or is there like books you can get, web, forums? What would be a good place to start?
Where's Bruce when you need him?
All of the above.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just pick one and go with it and run it all?
Help do them all, man. Pick up a bunch of crap computer gear, build your own network, learn the tools, break into them, fix things, break them again, secure them, lock them down, turn them over to friends to break into, go to meetings, go to groups, get on mailing lists, read books.
There's a 2600 group here.
The 2600 group here in Atlanta has kind of died out, but the DEF CON 404 group totally kicks ass. DC-404, Google for it. They're great.
All right, sweet. Thank you.
Oh, do we have any DEF CON 404 members here? Yeah, well, okay, well, there you go. Talk to those guys. Talk to them right there. In fact, you guys come up here for a second. I want the audience to look at you so they can
see what hackers look like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not just, no. I want them to look at you so they'll know who to come talk to and bug throughout the rest of the convention.
So
do we have any Freeside Atlanta people here? I should have asked. Freeside Atlanta person, come up here.
We want to get you on the face recognition software.
We want to share
so
the love.
That,
do we have any Atlanta
are?
Or, hell, any 2,600 people here at all?
There
anyone? Oh, 2,600 people, come on up.
5,200 people, come on up too. 5,200 people don't leave you out. Okay.
How about, do we have the ale people here?
That's an old joke. That's an old joke.
All right, well, here you go.
Ale.
All right, now the panel has grown substantially, and I'm going to drink some more and let the questions go to some of these
folks. You guys are all
staying
up here helping me with questions.
Coffee and Bailey's.
Ah, classic.
Water and Ritalin.
Photo shooting people.
Water and Ritalin.
Guys, photo.
By the way, learning to do this stuff can be done with hand-me-down hardware. The wall of Sheetbox was a donation from another guy who was cleaning out his basement who gave me a laptop that the display doesn't work on. That's what we use on the back end because we're not looking at it. We don't care.
Okay.
That's what we're using to capture the wall of sheep.
I have a proposal here. Since we got about 20 minutes left, let's do the Hacking 101 equivalent of speed dating, kind of, and we'll just let audience ask the questions. We answer them as rapid fire as possible. The first person who jumps in to answer gets to answer, and then we go on to the next question. How about that? We try to get as many people in as we can in the next 20 minutes.
Just real
Make
quick on open source.
Go ahead.
Just real quick on the open source. Almost everything you get, like Firefox, Chrome, are open source. They ask for volunteers. There's a website, SourceForge. Hundreds and thousands of projects all asking for help. Some are a pain. Some aren't a pain. Some are great to work with. Some are two guys. You know, in Canada, and some are 50 people working real hard, and they ask you to do anything from marketing to whatever you're good at, documentation, coding. It's real easy to get an open source and be a volunteer.
Thank you, sir.
Feel good?
That's good. Next question.
What do you think is the easiest code to start off with when you're beginning to code? Or
Squeak.
I don't know. I just want to start. I just
Scratch.
Began.
Scratch from MIT. Scratch at MIT.edu.
Okay.
Check it out. It's a lot of fun. No! No!
Due to the reaction there, you may want to look at PHP anyway just to figure out why other people don't like it.
No. Don't
All right, next
time.
Question.
Yeah.
Next question, please.
Next, please.
Okay, I was almost going to ask the same question because I'm so old that my experience was everybody learned BASIC first and then moved on to other languages. So I was going to ask, what do I recommend to new people now? Because I can't say start with BASIC
not Python.
C64.
Pearl's fine. No, for new people, Smalltalk using the robot stuff. Look for Smalltalk robots. The download image for that's really incredible.
So mine's not exactly a technical question. I'm a journalist, and I know that hackers like freedom of information. So I'm trying to find out a good resource to maybe get in contact with hackers when, let's say, the man or the government is trying to hold back something that should be publicly known.
Just tweet it. Somebody will see it.
IRC channels? Any specific channels?
Freenode.
Freenode.
Yeah. And keep it short.
Short. Tor and I2P host anonymous IRC services. And then there's, of course, Freenode. What are some other?
Are you looking to build up a list, basically, of sources you can check with on a regular basis, people you can actually talk to? Come back here and talk to me after the panel's over, and I'll give you specific email addresses and groups.
Thank you.
Whoa! That wasn't me.
No, but really, find people on Twitter, and they'll talk to you directly.
That happens a lot, but that wasn't me.
Cover it. That messes it up.
So I wanted to get into some of the...
Oh, is the battery going dead? Battery's going dead in the wireless.
Just step up here and use this one.
Yes, please speak into the robot penis.
So, robot penis, I wanted to try some of the new penetration tools like Metasploit. And I thought this robot penis could help, so I was going to ask it if...
Well, that's the right tool for the function.
You know, some of the good places to get some tutorials, like a new Backtrack just put out a new course list of different ways.
Oh my God! It's out of my area. I have no idea what you're talking about. I only heard buzzword. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Honestly, if you want really rudimentary, like, intro to hacking stuff, check out Hack 5. Spend some time looking around, finding just basic intro to stuff.
Metasploit.
Backtrack 5. Spend your time learning. Mess around with it. Be aware of your local laws. Go from there.
I work at the university. And we have a group called Gray Hat, which is a student information security group. They just went to their first Capture the Flag event and took first and second, which was pretty cool. And the way we train them is there's all kinds of online tools that allow you to boot up a completely vulnerable environment that you can hack on and try all the stuff. Some of them, like the WebGoat from OWASP, comes with a lesson plan that explains, so you can try it, and then you can open up the lesson plan and it'll explain how the hack works, how to prevent it, how to actually exploit it. And what's really cool is once you've done it, you can turn the thing off, turn it back on, it's right back to the way it was. So if you like wipe the customer database, just turn it back on, it comes back.
Come to Hacking 201 tomorrow night, and we'll have more than just an hour to go into the details.
Yeah, there is a lot of cool tools out there for
learning.
Plus,
we order pizza at midnight.
Yeah. But not really.
If you
want to
get started, legal and trying to play with stuff, damn vulnerable Linux is a great way to boot up. And there's
all right, we got the general info. Let him ask him. We were trying to get more people to ask questions.
Yep. Okay. So,
don't mean to interrupt.
I don't really want to get it real hacky, but what would be the best? I just learned enough, like, to be able to get around systems, like if SOAP or anything ever got in place.
Because
DEFCON 404, me. Are you local? Are you local to Atlanta?
No, I live up in Raleigh.
Oh,
DC Raleigh.
Look up your local DC group. If there isn't one in your area, see if you can start one, and you'll get some interesting people.
Yeah. And check 2600.com. Yeah, just check for local, and even start with 2600.com, local Linux users groups, DC DEF CON groups. Yeah, next question.
For HTML5 node-based game dev, I was having some problems with securitizing the server. Obviously, you want to do authoritative server, and you don't do the stuff on the client. You do all the logic on the server. But I was curious how you might make someone not give themselves infinite life and stuff like that.
I'm not familiar with securing Node, so.
It's all JavaScript stuff.
Node.js.
Yeah,
that's a 201 question. Yeah, that's a lot of detail.
It's got
to
be.
We'll be more than happy to chew over it in 201, but we're trying to do shorter, less detailed stuff right now.
Yeah, come to 201 tomorrow. We will try and fill you in there.
Hilton Room 203 EFF track starts at, Oh, I'm sorry, 201. 203 is space track. Hilton 201, 10 o'clock. We go all night.
Hacker 201 in 201.
They're at the top of the escalator.
If I could ask for future reference, if y'all would spell some of the shit that you're talking about, because I know it's P-U-R-L and not P-E-A-R-L, but just for, you know, like Metasploit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or P-E-C, even that, you know, that's my knitting experience.
Hacker is H-A-C-K-E-R.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm dysgraphic. Let me spell for you.
And then the other thing that I have is I understand that a lot of this is geared towards a wireless on your laptop. What is there available for protection for your iPhone and your Droid? Is that something? I mean, is this? I have a limited knowledge. It's been since the late 90s or nearly 2000s since I've been programming at all. But what is there available for those of us that really don't have, you know, X number of hours to invest in all of this?
iOS devices support a VPN, although it's only PPTP, which has already been broken, but it still at least can get you past that first hop for most people. So you need to find a service somewhere that has PPTP endpoints so that you can type that information to your iPhone when you're on a questionable location.
Here's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah,
here's a good rule of thumb. Don't be the low-hanging fruit. Let someone else be the low-hanging fruit.
That's why I'm asking for, you know, if there are apps and availability, because I don't want to be the, oh, my God.
Well, because you're asking and aware of this problem, I already suspect you are no longer the low-hanging fruit. So good work. Keep it up.
I also know that unless you have a jailbroken phone, the VPN with PPTP is the only solution because it's the only thing the native iOS offers. So,
you know, passwd will get you very far changing your password, so.
Yeah.
Do that first. The first thing you do after a jailbreak, passwd, set your password.
Unless you like Alpine.
Otherwise, I already know your password for jailbroken iPhones. I mean,
root is Alpine.
It's Alpine.
Mobile.
Everyone
Alpine.
Knows this.
Questions, please. We would like questions. We got a few more minutes to fill. Oh, we got 10 minutes to fill. Says the giant clock in the back.
I loaded an app on my little Android, and then it asks for permissions to do everything. I mean, it's like a little game, and they want to look at my contact list. They want to go to the internet. They want to see what underwear I'm wearing. You know, is there anything? Well,
what's the app? I haven't gotten the underwear.
No. Well, Droid can do every that. Little app wants to totally take apart my machine and turn on my, you know, my wireless and all that. You know, it seems like they're overreaching in terms of permissions.
Well, so a lot of Android, with what they're asking for, is anything that contacts any part that's outside of any general structure, they're going to ask for. Whether it be like one bit into it or the entire thing, whether they're looking for your phone status to see whether you're in the middle of a cell phone call or not, or whether they're really wanting to look at your entire phone book to link that up with a database somewhere to do whatever they feel like doing, depending on the app. Android is really built upon asking the question, are you really comfortable with this? So when you're looking at apps for stuff, it's really, do you want the app that, you know, let's say the Connect 4 app that asks for your network status and your phone status versus your contact book and, you know, everything else on your phone versus, you know, two things. It's really read what you're trying to get into. Don't just obligatorily download everything that looks interesting to you. And do what?
For Android, if you're savvy and you can understand a little bit about permissions on your computer, there are applications for managing your permissions on a per application basis for Android. So if you have stuff that doesn't need that stuff, you should probably delete it. Find a good replacement, but if you can't do that, then there are permissions apps for Android.
My question is not really technical, but I'm just going to talk. I'll keep talking.
That's got a
public libraries and the internet. What do you think is happening
to
public
libraries?
They want
me to pay $5 for a lanyard with a dragon? I've been working here my ass off for 10 years. What the hell, man?
Can you
public libraries and in the age of the internet, what are the future? What's the future of public libraries in your eyes?
Actually, I was having conversations this afternoon with three librarians up in the green room, and they were talking about the move to ebooks and how bad the publishers are making it, how hard the publishers are making it to move to ebooks in the public libraries. One publisher charges 300 times the retail price for an ebook for a library to get a copy that they can loan out over and over again. And that's a license for one book. So if one person has it out for 2 weeks, electronically has it out for 2 weeks, nobody else can have it. This is the nuttiness that the publishing company is going through, trying to figure out what to do with this whole new revolution, the whole digital revolution. I think there's always going to be a need for libraries. There's people that can't afford a Kindle or a Kindle subscription or whatever it takes to get this stuff on. There's people that love the feeling of the books in their hands or just want to browse 20 titles before they pick out the right one. I think the libraries are here to stay, but really publishers got to get their cranium out of their tail to really make something out of this.
You want to know who I think is doing the ebooks right? I think the gaming industry is doing. When I go out and buy a gaming book, I like having the physical copy of the book, and most of the gaming publishers out there, when I buy the physical book, they will also let me have an electronic copy as well. I think that kicks ass. That's why I keep buying physical books, not just because I like them, but because they're going to say, hey, you bought the physical book, here's the electronic one as well. It's beautiful, convenient for whatever situation I'm in. I love it.
Yeah, so the other thing is, a lot of the companies that are doing this are really about the money, and they want you to buy a copy for everything. But there are the people that read the books just because they're stuck in one part. They want to know one thing. They don't want the entire book. And then there are the collectors. The collectors are where your profit is. The collectors are the people you want to market to. The collectors are the people where your money really, really is. And if you don't market to them, they're not going to buy it anyway. And if you do, you will still get your profit, and you will not miss the 10% that are just like, what is this? And that's who you need to market to. And that's the part that a lot of them are missing.
All right. 5 minutes left. Speed questions. We're going to limit answers to 1 minute.
Since you were already on that subject, I was going to say, I know the main problem is nonfiction, but what about Bayon?
I love them. I think they're great. I love the free library thing they did. An interesting study. Every author who participated in the Bayon Free Library saw sales of their in-print titles go up, and they frequently had a lot of their out-of-print titles come back into print. So the people who participated made money, which is interesting. When you know, you're giving the product away, you still make more money off the sales.
O'Reilly did some similar study for that too.
Bayon. How is it? B-E-A-N or
B-A-E-N?
B-A-E-N. Yeah.
O'Reilly did the same thing too. Is that they actually DRM freed all of their electronic books because they found that the piracy that resulted was not enough to worry about people sharing the back end copies and actually caused more ill will. And they've even found that giving away free copies of the book online doesn't seem to significantly dip into the print sales.
Yeah, you do it right. The people who do the Eclipse Phase role-playing game is probably one of the best recent role-playing games I've seen in a long time. They give away the PDF copy of the book and use that as a marketing tool to sell the physical copies. And they're making money off of it, enough that they can keep putting books out.
Well, to be fair, any media that you're putting out, a lot of the people that are pirating to see if they actually like it or not. And the people that are actually liking the media like it, they will pay for it. If you turn out something that is complete crap and someone just wants to see it, whether they want to pay for it or not, and they don't want to pay for it, that's their choice. But you should be able to, you know, look at it.
What IRC hacker channels would you recommend?
Pound SE2600, that's Southeast 2600 on Freenode. Next question. Bueller? Yeah.
Just to finish it up, all lasting statements you guys have on pirating.
Arr. Yar.
That works.
Yeah, I've pirated a shitload of stuff in my time, the audiobooks, music, movies, and whatnot. And you know what? Everything I liked, I went out and I bought a physical copy of it. The stuff I didn't like, I just deleted it.
Amen. Same.
And, see y'all at Hacking 201 tomorrow night. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.